11.2, Interactive Study, Legal Treatises. I love legal treatises. Legal treatises are intimidating at first, but once you understand kind of their function and how they work, they become a lot less scary. Let's start out by giving you a broad idea, and I'm sure this was mentioned in the textbook. There's a relationship between treatises and encyclopedias that will help you understand the function of each. A legal encyclopedia tries to give you a little bit about every area of law. A treatise tries to give you everything about a single area of law. They are the photographic negatives of each other, and therefore they serve very kind of unique and different but also complementary purposes. That's why you tend to use an encyclopedia at the beginning to kind of get that broad feeling for what you're researching, and also because, to be honest, it's more likely that you'll find something in there since encyclopedias are so broad. But then after you've focused your research and become educated a little bit by those other secondary sources and understand the area that you're going to be needing to research in, then you move over to the treatises at some point. Now, there are areas of law that if you are working in a very specific substantive area, such as real property, that's all you do as a paralegal. You might actually start in a real property law treatise, one that your attorney really likes or that you really like. So that's a possibility. But in general, I would recommend researchers, and this is how I conducted research, and some of the best researchers, including attorneys that I ever knew, used this system. You basically start in the Digest, Amjur, CJS, and then ALR, and state statutes, if it's a state case, federal statutes, if it's a federal case. You start in those, you get through those sets, and then you hone in on the more specific things, like the legal periodicals that we'll talk about in a bit, like legal treatises, and so forth. So, now, legal treatise. Restatements is by far and away the most respected legal treatise. In fact, I would say that it is the most respected secondary authority out there. It is certainly one of the most commonly, if not the most commonly quoted secondary authority. There are law schools that use restatements, specific sets of restatements, for their law books, for their textbooks in law school. There are, I'm thinking about a dozen sets of restatements, so it doesn't, try to cover every area of law, but there's a restatement of torts, which is a few volumes long. There's a restatement of real property, which is, I think, 3-4 volumes long, I'm not sure. Restatements of foreign judgments, which has to do with judgments outside the current jurisdiction and how those are applied and so forth. So depending on what your research topic is, there may or may not be a restatement that works for you. But if you've done your research in the other sources, such as in digests and in which lead you to case law, or in the encyclopedias, which can not only lead you to case law but might lead you to restatements or another treatise, if you're led there somehow, then what happens is you have a book. If you just open up the middle of a book and look at it, it will look very much like an encyclopedia. It has, typically in most treatises, commentary on top, and then footnotes on the bottom that lead to additional authority. Our rule still applies. You always start, unless you're led to a specific section of a treatise by another source, if you're just starting fresh in a restatement, where do you start? The index. The index leads to the main volume, and the main volume leads you to additional authority. Now, restatements, as I mentioned, is a treatise that follows these same rules, except its structure is slightly different. You start in the index, of course. Index leads you to the main volume, but the main volume doesn't have footnotes like we're used to. I mean, there might be an odd footnote somewhere in a volume of restatements for unusual purposes, but I can't say it never has a footnote. I don't remember ever seeing one. But so how does it lead you to additional authority? Well, it has a thing called an appendix. The appendix acts as a collection of footnotes. So you have the index leads to the main volume, which leads to the appendix. So you look up if the index leads you to section 56 of Restatement of Torts, or Restatement of Contracts. I like using Restatement of Contracts as an example. It leads you to section 56. You go to section 56 in the main volume. You open it up, and it deals with this subject matter. Then you want to see, okay, you determine this applies to my research. So how do I expand this to other authority? Then you find the appendix, turn to section 56 in the appendix, and there are the collections of footnotes, sometimes dozens of pages of footnotes. So it's a very powerful tool. Now, a lot of times people get intimidated by restatements because they go to the restatement and there's this bold statement, bold-faced statement, that is basically what the restatement is. Restatement means it's restating the law, trying to clarify the law, or sometimes trying to tell you what it thinks the law ought to be. There'll be this bold statement, and then after that, there's a lot of commentary. There's sometimes what they call illustrations. Party A was walking down the street when it saw Party B. I love those illustrations because it's really trying to say, here's how this applies in real life. But here's why some people are intimidated. They're led to Section 56, and it may be something that is a little confusing to them or doesn't make a lot of sense because they're not an expert in contract law, for instance. So you have to work a little harder when you're in a treatise, because the way a treatise is structured is usually like this. Restatement of Contracts starts out from the beginning assuming that you know nothing. It actually starts from Section 1 like you were in a kindergarten class for lawyers. Restatement of Contracts, Section 1. What is an obligor? Section 2. What is an obligee? Section 3. What is an agreement? These are made up off the top of my head, but if you go to them, they'll be like this. Section 4, what is a breach? It actually starts out from the very beginning. So Section 56, if that's where you were led, kind of assumes you've read all the previous sections. Now, that's not to say you have to read all the sections. That's not realistic for a researcher, but it gives you an idea of what the publishers of the restatements are doing when they create this book. They're not trying to be overly complicated by intention. They're just saying, here's what we've led up to. Here's an issue at Section 56 that is more complicated than at Section 4 or Section 7, something like that. So if I were a paralegal today, if I were hired as a paralegal or got a new job as a paralegal that dealt with contracts, you know what the best advice I could give that paralegal would be, or myself, would be to go to the law library some weekend and read the first 50 sections of Restatement of Contracts. You're not going to be an expert, but it makes a lot more sense after that. And you've got a foundation, so if you're led to Section 112, at least you've got kind of this foundation where you're going to be able to probably understand a lot more about what happened. And Go to the library or go online and look up restatements, especially the earlier ones. They're not really that intimidating if you have a foundation in this stuff. So I would really recommend doing that. If I were a litigation paralegal, reading the first 50 sections of Restatement of Torts, it's just there for free. It's the only way I can put it. It's like a mini law school education for free, and it's there for you. And if you don't have time, or if you're too stressed to do it right now or right after you graduate, while you have access to online research, I would go in and I would actually print out those first 50 sections of torts, especially torts and contracts, and maybe real property if that's an area you're interested in, because at the end of the day, you'll want to come back and read those, because it will help your ability to grow as a paralegal and to understand these concepts as a paralegal. And again, since you have taken this course to become the most marketable, most competent paralegal you can be, why not take it that little extra step? It's really not that hard. And by the way, we're not going to give you a test on it. Now, you're saying to yourself, well, we've already taken contract law and tort law. Well, if you haven't taken those yet, reading those first 50 sections would be a great way to kind of get a start. And if you have already taken those courses, it means it's going to make a lot more sense for you and probably read a lot easier for you. So just a recommendation. You don't have to do it. Take it for what it's worth.